Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo, episode 32 with Catherine Hall and special guest host Sarah Lane, recorded Tuesday, November 8th, 2011. Jingna Zhang. This episode of TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated sync app link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. Hey, everybody, and welcome to TWiT Photo. This is episode 32. I am not Leo Laporte, obviously. I'm Sarah Lane, filling in for Leo, who's off this week. But I'm very excited that Catherine Hall found me adequate enough to sit in for Leo and learn a little something on the show.
I'm so excited to have you here.
I am so excited to be here. You know, I don't know that much.
To learn.
Did you?
Yeah, I've watched a ton of yours. Well, kind of my inspiration.
Well, thanks. Yeah. That's awesome. You're my inspiration as far as photography goes, because I'm very interested in everything photography. I have all my little toys that I play with, but certainly on the professional side, I don't really know what I'm talking about. So this is actually a really fun exercise for me, because I listen to the show because I work in the same room as you, usually prepping for TNT when you and Leo shoot the show. So I pick up stuff here and there, but I'm not 100% part of the show. So this is fun.
So now you get to be immersed.
Exactly.
So it'll be good.
All right. So Catherine, how does the show usually work?
So we're going to start off. Actually, first of all, I want to make a quick announcement. After the show, we're going to be doing a hangout where we're going to be doing, and I'm going to be in Leo's office.
This is a Google Plus hangout.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Which I've heard is rare to get to go in Leo's office.
Oh, I never go in there without him being there. So I'd be yelled at.
Yeah, so it's kind of a big deal. Uh-huh. So tune in 3:30. You can go to my blog to get information on that.
What is the hangout? Does it have a specific topic?
We're going to do a roundtable with four other photographers, and we'll do a discussion first and then a image critique.
Great.
So,
and how long is it going to run?
About an hour. Yeah.
So you get an hour of TWiT Photo, and then you get an extra
hour
behind the
so
scenes
all those photo enthusiasts,
bonus content.
They will not work today.
Absolutely. And they have you
that's
to thank.
Their goal. They can do TNT in between. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right, because we end somewhere around 3:30.
Yeah.
So you get a photo show complete with a guest who we'll introduce in just a second. Then you've got some tech news of the day, hard hitting, crackerjack reporting, and then you've got Catherine.
Yeah. So it should be great.
We've assembled a wonderful day for you. Hope you didn't want to get anything done. So
should we introduce our amazing guest.
Without further ado, so this is somebody that you are familiar with?
Yeah, I know her work, which is just incredibly poetic and sensual and beautiful. And I assumed that she was a lot older from viewing her work, because it's very sophisticated. And I found out she's 23 years old. And I'm like, this girl's a freaking prodigy. And so right away, I was very interested in having her on the show. And I'm super excited to learn from her and just be exposed to her greatness.
Well, let's introduce her. Jingna Zhang is joining us now via Skype. Catherine says, you are a 23-year-old prodigy. How in the world did that happen?
She's going to blush.
I don't think I am, but thank you, Catherine. It's really nice to be on the show, and thank you for having me here.
Well, I have had the pleasure of at least perusing some of your amazing photos on your website, and you are obviously extremely talented. 23 seems to me really young to have such a portfolio. When did you start working professionally?
Around when I was about 19 or so. I think that was when I started getting a steady flow of jobs. And I started shooting when I was around 18. So it took about a year for me to get constant flow of stuff.
How did you get your work out there at the beginning? I mean, if you were 18 and you started thinking, I want to do this for real, I think I've got talent, when did the first person notice you? When did you get your break?
I think in the very beginning, I was just doing test shoots with a model agency in Singapore, a really good agency called Mannequin. And they were really, really supportive. And I was shooting a lot of new girls because Singapore is actually kind of known to have a lot of new faces coming into town to build their portfolio because we have very strong styling and photography here. And then at some point of time, I just got introduced to like a stylist or two or editors. And ironically, my first paid job, which was a cover for men's folio, like a men's fashion magazine, came from one of the stylists who used to work at the magazine. And she actually introduced me to her editor, and he was like, "Oh, you know, like we have a 10th anniversary issue coming up, and we're gonna do like 10 different covers. Do you want to do a cover and a story? And why don't you shoot a story for Kenzo? Because it's a little bit romantic, like what you do with your work." And I thought, like, for sure I'll do this. But it's funny because like before that, I have never ever done any photography with like male models, and it was just really, really different from what I was used to do, since like, you know, the way you would pose a model and what you expect, like the rate of the pacing when you work on the shoot, that's like just all really different. But it turned out well, and then I was introduced to more people and just kind of started picking up. Yeah.
So was there a point where they hire you for this job, you're new, you've never shot men before, was there a point where you're thinking, do I say no or do I say yes? Am I prepared for this? And how do you proceed?
I was really, really nervous, but like I had a photographer friend. He was getting established himself and quite well known. So he said, you know, there's nothing to worry about because you know that they are asking you to shoot because they love your work and they approached you not because like you went up to them and like, please give me a chance, you know. So he said, you know, if you're not confident, go do a test shoot with a male model and, you know, just get an idea of how that works. And so like it kind of became standard for me if I'm doing a new a job that, you know, kind of has a lighting that's a little bit tricky or has certain elements that's not what I used to do on my shoots, then I'll do like a test shoot for like, you know, both in terms of light and concept, just to make sure I can have everything under my control, that I'm confident when I go on set. So
yeah, I think there's two takeaways for me for this. Number one is being prepared and doing test shoots, and I think a lot of times people don't realize the value of test shoots.
Yeah, it's really important.
And the other thing too, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is I do think people say no to opportunities a lot. And I know this personally, there was several occasions where I almost said no to jobs because it sounds like a ridiculous question, right? Like, of course she's going to do it, but not really. A lot of times you'll say no out of fear, or you'll make up excuses and you won't do it. And
because you don't feel prepared.
You don't feel prepared.
Feel like you know the subject matter well enough to do it justice.
My first masterclass I ever taught at WPPI, I had written an email to the person offering the course saying, I am declining. I'm not going to do it. I'm not prepared. Yeah. And then my sister's like, you're crazy. Don't send that email. Why would you do that? And it goes back to what Jingna was saying, in that if they have faith in you to ask you to come teach or to shoot or whatever, then you just match that faith, and you kind of have, you're never going to advance in your career if you don't take chances, because you're never really prepared, right?
That's true. You definitely have to take chances. Jingna, you mentioned that Singapore is kind of known as a place where you can see fresh faces. There are models building their portfolio there. Is it the same for photographers? Is that the kind of city you might hang out in for a couple of years if you wanted to get a lot of experience that you wouldn't be able to get in New York or Paris or other cities?
It's not very common for us to see photographers coming in, just because I guess because like the market is really, really small, and it tends to be a little bit saturated. So I mean we have foreign photographers who are coming in right now, but it's definitely not as much as we would see of models coming in. And like, I think I have to clarify this, like it's not really like what you think, you know, like models.com, like okay, models of the week, this girl is a fresh face, is a new face or been coming, like all those girls you see there, at least half of them have been modeling for at least like two or three years. Like, you know, in terms of what they mean fresh faces in like New York or Paris is when these girls have a portfolio ready that's already being built from, say, you know, from around Asia, like mm-hmm. I said, Singapore, and they're ready to break into that major fashion market. Like, that's what, like, I think they term as fresh faces, because a lot of these girls are models. I have shot them or I have seen them in town in Singapore, like, in the past few years. And a lot of times that's when they were, like, anywhere between the age of 14 to 16, you know, like, really, really just not of age to actually start walking in Paris. And just that's, like, completely new when they're coming to Singapore, I guess is what I'm saying. So photographer-wise, like, I think it's more of when people like actually hire a commercial photographer or a certain name big enough for, you know, the bigger agencies like Saatchi or Ogilvy, and they're actually hired here to work rather than like coming in to as like to stop or build up their book. I don't think, not so much for photographers.
As we flip through some of your photos, the chat room is trying to figure out how to describe your style. You know, I kind of say, it's sort of like a ethereal, edgy sort of a thing. Somebody said Vampire Diaries. Somebody said gothic.
Yeah.
Do you like to? Is there if someone says, well, what's your style? What do you enjoy shooting style wise the most? Do you feel like you have kind of a signature look?
I think I like going for something that's kind of romantic and painterly. Probably, I really like. Like Pre-Raphaelite paintings, and I think that's like a huge influence on my work. I really like girls who look like, you know, who are kind of doll-like looking, or like the model agencies tend to say, like, I like alien face girls. It's really, really huge. deep set eyes, and you know, like, yeah. So strange looking girls.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what your original question, I was going to go back to this for a second. So she's worked for Elle. You were actually nominated for Photographer of the Year by Elle in Singapore.
Yeah.
And Bazaar. And it takes people, fashion photography is actually one of the hardest, okay, to take photography itself, really hard to get into. Then take it to the next level, fashion, that genre is particularly hard. So you're 18 years old, you decide you want to be a photographer. When was your first fashion spread, and was there like a, I know we talked about this a little bit, but I want to dig into it. Was there a break? Like, how does that happen? And what do you attribute that quick success to?
I think the first break was with Harper's Bazaar Singapore. I had the opportunity to shoot a beauty story for them, and it was funny because I was so scared, and I didn't know until much later that the editor I worked with, she was really, really scared too, because apparently Bazaar Singapore, up to that point of time, like 4 years ago, I guess, they had always bought stories from overseas. You know, like when they have such a huge franchise of magazines, like everywhere worldwide, they actually purchase stories for like local editions if it's not really huge or anything, right? So the time when I shot for them was actually, I think, the first story, beauty story, that was actually commissioned locally in Singapore, and I had like absolutely no idea. So like they were kind of semi worried about the outcome, but you know, they wanted to test it out with me, and of course I was like extremely nervous, because it's like, oh my god, it's Bazaar, and I really don't like want to screw it up, and I was kind of pushing the limit of what I thought I could do, like being a little bit overambitious, and then I ran into a lot of logistics problems, but everything turned out okay in the end.
Well, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was kind of like, that was when I was 19, yeah, I think. Yeah, and so since then, like, I think it turned out to be a good working experience, and the editor liked me, and I guess since it's one of the first shoots she was doing for Beauty when she started working there as well, we just started having, like, a very good long-standing relationship, and we continue working together for the past few years.
It seems that having been only 23, although you have obviously a lot of experience, your stance might be a little different on post-processing than somebody who has been in the business long enough to remember when you couldn't do things like that with digital photos. I was actually listening to an interview with Annie Leibovitz. She was on NPR on my drive up here just before we started the show, and she was talking about how, oh, yeah, we do that all the time now, but I really, really, really want the photo to be as close as perfect as possible before we start fooling around with it afterwards. Yeah. Where do you fall on that argument?
I think likewise, it's the same for me. That's what I like to do because, like I said, I'm really influenced by the pre-FLIs, and for me, like, if I'm trying to create something painterly, I think that comes, like, the essence of the photo comes from, like, the main elements being in place in that moment I capture it, and then the rest of the things we are just enhancing, you know, clean up blemishes or clean up flare or, you know, lens dust. I think those things are okay, but I generally wouldn't be like, okay, this shot looks kind of cool, but I think it will look cooler if I Photoshop in, like, 10 other chairs in the back or whatever. I'm like, I kind of want it on a set as it is, like, to arrange it in whatever way I like. I prefer having it shot as it is.
That's for sure. In camera. So it rings true. Everyone says that. All the guests we have get it right in camera as much as possible.
But well, I think for commercial photography-wise, we'll definitely come, like, you know, with, like, meet up with clients who are going to require, like, compositing and stuff, and that's something we can't really help, but for what we do on our own.
Are you doing any retouching yourself, or pretty much that's all being handed off to other people?
I'm still in the process of trying to make myself hand it out to people so I can work more, because I take a very long time to retouch. But, like, as it is right now, I retouch most of my work on my own.
As it is right now, you what?
I retouch most of my work on my
own.
Oh,
you retouch yourself.
You're trying to learn how to delegate it to other people.
Yeah. Because, you know, they're like my babies, right?
Yeah.
And I'm, like, giving my child to be raised by someone else. Like, I don't know what's going to go wrong halfway.
Yeah, if your
vision's going to
stay. And
then I'll have to come back and fix it. And if they turn out okay, it feels like, okay, this is someone else's work. Cool.
Yeah.
And then they kind of, like, when they come back to me, they feel like stepson in the family. You know, I don't have the same kind of love and passion as I have for these work as I do for the rest I retouch myself, because I spend more time with them.
Oh, that's true. That makes sense. So you originally studied fashion, and then you shifted to photography. How did you actually learn photography?
Just try and error.
So
was that easy?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just start doing that
tomorrow. What's the try? What's the try? What did you do?
Like, I think you know, I mean, different people learn really differently. I'm a very hands-on learning person. So we had to document our work, of course, our designs from, like, fashion classes and, you know, do a presentation. And then I remember there was this project where we were supposed to do, like, a fashion shoot. And, like, we would get into a group of four or five girls, and one of them would be the model. And we try to put something together, right? We just style it or whatever. And I did the photography since I happened to have, like, a DSLR camera, and the rest of my teammates didn't. And from there, I was like, hey, you know, this is actually kind of fun. Like, why don't I do more of this? And, of course, like, for everyone, I think that glamorous aspect of taking something from, you know, being done, like, dress-wise, to seeing it in print in a photo is, like, the glamorous process is very exciting for everybody involved. So I managed to get my classmates together to do, like, two or three more shoots. And that was when I kind of really realized, like, I want to do more of this. And it just became a habit, you know? And then it just snowballed from there.
Well, we definitely want to get into some of your tips and your favorite photos. Before we do that, let's take a quick break to thank Ford, because they're our first sponsor of this episode of Twit Photo. And Ford is great because, let's say you're a busy photographer, you're traveling around a lot, you're always in your car going from shoot to shoot, but you want to stay connected with maybe your community of fans who love your work. They're tweeting at you, for example. What if you could have your tweets read to you as you have your hands on the wheel and you're barreling down the freeway at 75 miles an hour, as long as that's the speed limit? You can, actually. There's something great called Ford Sync App Link. This is basically a series of apps that are running in your car. For example, a Twitter app, so you could get your app replies read to you, or you could have your news feed read to you, so you just feel like you're not at all disconnected from the rest of the world while you're going from point A to point B. What if music is very inspiring to you? You could have voice control on your Pandora station. So Catherine could say something like, you know, I need to get zen. I'm going to get into this photo shoot I'm doing for a wedding. Play my classical station. And your Ford vehicle will go ahead and do that. It's really neat. It's very much like having a robot in your car that'll help you do a lot of stuff. The Twitter app is called Open Beak, for example. You could say things like read timelines or read replies. It's kind of got kind of a Siri thing going on, except it's in your car. AppLink is also built on an API platform, so that means that Ford is going to keep working with developers, and you're going to see more and more apps in Ford models coming down the pipe. Voice-activated Sync AppLink is available right now in the 2012 Ford Fiesta, and you can learn a lot more about everything that Ford is doing in their vehicles and down the road at ford.com/technology. They're really cool. They're absolutely at the forefront of how the vehicle experience will be in all cars as we know it. They're just first.
Now we know why Leo loves his Ford.
That's right. Yeah, Leo's actually going to get the electric Ford Focus. I think it's the Focus. Yeah, Focus, not Fusion. And he says that we can all have a chance to drive it around the block. It'll be silent.
Oh, gosh.
Very excited about that. So thanks again to Ford for sponsoring this episode of Twit Photo. Again, that's ford.com/technology. Head over there and see what they're up to. I think you'll be really impressed. All right. Should we get into some of...
Well, before we go to tips, I actually wanted to ask you a couple more things about... I think, Kurt, so you grew up until you were 8, you lived in China, correct? 8 or 9?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you shifted on to Singapore. And I think that one of the interesting things about her past is that it didn't... Like, we're all looking at these photos and thinking, oh, she's 23 years old, everything's amazing, she's so, you know... But she definitely struggled for a while at an early age, being raised in a more oppressed culture, very, very strict, very disciplined. Mm. And around 8 or 9, she discovered... I'm not sure at which age, you can correct me, but anime actually helps pull her out of a childhood depression. Can you explain... how that works?
Yeah, like when we talked yesterday, Catherine asked me a little bit about that. Because I always have this in my bio or like write up sometimes. Like I'm really like inspired by Gundam Wing, and a lot of times people just think like, oh, you know, like she likes anime, like cool. But actually, what happens is like my family is like standard Chinese conservative, and my parents are really, really all about you know, be a good student and dream about becoming a doctor or a lawyer. And the way I was brought up, it was that all that I knew, you know. And I was so disciplined. I was trying to be such a good kid. It's like, all right, like, this is what I have to do with my life. And you never really think about questioning what you're told or what your parents say. And I think it's the same for a lot of my... schoolmates from like back in primary school, like when I was younger. And I felt like that was all that was to my life. And when I was in Singapore, like around like 8 or 9, I saw Gundam Wing, and then I was watching, you know, like at that such a like impressionable age, there was all this talk about like fighting for freedom and all these people sacrificing their lives and fighting for something and saying things like the future is in my own hands, like the future is to be built with my own hands, and I control my own destiny. And then I realized like this dedication and that passion and that thing called freedom sounds really, really amazing, and I want to explore and know what that is, and I want to have something that I can so passionately fight for and dream for on my own, you know. Because before this, I've never realized that I could dream. Like, it's just something that has never been taught to me and I never knew about, and so I've never thought about. And
was it difficult to convince your parents once you decided that you wanted to take control of your own destiny, that this was a better idea than being a lawyer?
It's not like I just went up to them like, your stuff, I'm gonna do my own thing.
The process.
Yeah.
She was like 9 years old. She was like, yeah.
I mean, I daydream like, oh yeah, like I'll do my own shit one day, and you know, I command like my own team and whatever, do cool stuff, right? It's a bit sad part. Like I was grew up with kind of like a set environment, like aside from that rigid family perspective of things. Like I have friends who passed away when I was really young, and more than one death around me of just like friends from illness or from suicide. So like I was in this spiral of thinking that I think, like, at some point of time, I started thinking that I would die really, really young, too. And then that was when it really came to me that, hey, if I'm going to die really young, I want to do whatever I want to do and whatever I would like to do and just live for myself. So, at that time, I was staying with my mom and my stepdad and my younger half-sister. And my stepdad's family was not, like, the greatest to me. And I worked really hard to get into a very good secondary school, I guess like middle school, and it was the best in Singapore. And like after I got in, I'm just like, well, like now I want to do like what I'm really interested in. So like watching all this anime and like listening to Japanese rock just inspired me to be like hanging out with artists or musicians. And then I was on a band, I played a keyboard and like jammed for about a whole year, and it just made me want to do all these things that was not so academical, especially, you know, like something stereotyped to be what my school, a student from my school would be like. And then I was doing air rifle. I started when I went to secondary school, I started doing air rifle and I was doing well as well. So I trained a lot and I spent a lot of time on art and on music, and I slept in class. And my mom was just really, really sad, because I think it like at some point of time she realized like, when did this happen, how did this happen? Like I thought she was like such a good student and such a good kid for the longest time, and suddenly she's just having this rebellious period of, you know, being angsty and like not listening and not studying and associating herself with quote unquote like bad company.
I think, Xing, what you're describing is something that so many people go through. It just sounds like you went through what you call a rebellious period of finding yourself at just a really young age.
Yeah, but I think the point is, like, of course, I always remember, you know, being told or being taught, like, you want to be, like, grow up to be a good person and a contributing member of society. And I think at least that's something I strive to do during this rebellious period. I'm not just like, I'm just doing this because my parents don't agree with it. Like, I actually, like, I had a purpose and something I wanted to pursue. And I think that kind of makes a difference with some of these, like, maybe people who are, like, you know, rebelling for the sake of rebelling, or just because their friends say they're not cool and they're like rebelling together, you know. But so I tried to do that, and then I realized I wasn't like dying. and I was like, okay, now I need like backup plans or what else to do after this, because my grades were really, really bad, and if I wanted to stay in this prestigious school, like I need to do something about it. But I was doing so well in air rifle, I was like, I really want to go full time with this, you know. I want to go to the Olympics, and it's not impossible for me. I mean, I've been to World Cups, I've been to World Championships, I've been to Commonwealth Games, and sometimes my scores are, I know you'll be good enough, you know. And I worked really hard, so I think that kind of dedication also kind of carried through to my photography later on when I started working on it. And but like this whole time, back to what Catherine originally said, was like, you know, the root of it was kind of just watching Gundam Wing and just learning, like, you know, the power of like learning how to dream and having a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. One quote she has on her Facebook is, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." So that sort of sums that up. So you were on the rifle team when you were younger too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, for 6 years.
For 6 years. And I know you had a really big accolade with that. Oh, How did being... You were like sports girl of the year, correct?
Yeah.
And how old were you during that?
16, I think.
And then, so there's the rifle team, there's the piano, there's the gaming that came a little bit later. How have all of these... You know, she's very active in the StarCraft community. How have all of these things played in sort of a disciplinary way affected your photography?
I think, no offense to anyone that's in like fashion or in photography, but like, I mean, our industry and circle can sometimes be a little bit superficial, sometimes be a little bit, I think it's too glamorous sometimes that it blinds people, you know, like all they care about is all these partying and all these name dropping. And in a way, I think all these, like you know, back when I first started photography, I was still doing a rifle and then working with artists for a period of time. And then now like managing my StarCraft team, like it just helps keeps me so much more grounded to just remembering who I am, because I've seen so many people who just change when they go into fashion, and sometimes it's like they lose themselves, you know, and they don't know what they're really doing with their lives. And I mean, like I said, like, you know, it for me, things started off with, like, for example, anime or things. And I mean, I've always been involved with like the digital art community, people who a lot of concept artists who make games, who make work in movies, and like Japanese rock, all these things. I think it's really important to not forget where I came from, so and stay true to myself, you know, being honest. And like, I don't want to just because, you know, gaming is like, oh, you know, you're such a dork, such a nerd, or doing other things like managing artists, oh, I don't know how that relates to your photography. I think I want to explore and put in all I can for these things, because I think they all come back to influence, like everything ties back together in some way, for sure.
I think that you really hit the nail on the head when you say that there's a perception, and certainly if you're in the photography community, you know that it's true to a certain extent, that especially fashion, you think, everyone's drinking champagne and sitting in the front row at runway shows, and do they ever think about anything else? And, I mean, it would be the same thing in any profession. I mean, if you didn't have other interests, you didn't have other influences that helped you become a well-rounded person, you would probably not be as good at what you do as you are.
It's important. I think it's always nice to be able to look into it, like an almost like an outsider's like from an outsider's perspective, which is what I feel like I do, because I've never seen myself as like a fashion person. It just happens that I love photographing beautiful girls, and I want to create images of beauty, and I want to photograph these beautiful clothing, because I used to design or used to sew them on my own, and like I really appreciate like good design, good concepts, good workmanship, and all these things coupled together, they like photography is just such a right channel, and then fashion photography happens to just fall into what I can do so well, so people come to me and I'm doing that. But I don't think I ever tried, like, except in the very beginning when we dream about working in fashion, right? When you're not inside the circle, like, you know. But like for the most of it, I think I've always seen myself as an outsider to fashion, and so I have a different perspective and view on it, because I'm not constrained by like trends or, you know, styles that, you know, I particularly need to follow. I'm just going by my own aesthetics and what I believe I want to present in a final, good, beautiful image. Like, of course, like I do my research and my homework on, like, okay, like what are some of the things in this season? I follow up on the designers that I like, you know, McQueen or Galliano. But like, I don't entirely see myself as a fashion person. It's those things, like all these things I do, it's like just out of interest, just like with art and with like StarCraft or anything.
Well, yeah. I know Catherine's dying to ask you a little bit about the kind of gear that you use and some of the tips you might have for the rest of us in order to get, you know, half of the talent that you have in all of the photos we've seen. So let's take a quick break. Thank Netflix for sponsoring this episode of Twit Photo. Obviously, Catherine, are there any particular movies that inspire you as a photographer? Anything
well,
that ever...
I actually asked her the same question, and she said she's inspired a lot by art, but she said her favorite movie, one of them, was Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, so that's a good little segue into Netflix, because Netflix is great for anybody who's not familiar with the service. You probably are, because you know, you're a Twit watcher, and we talk about Netflix all the time, but if you're not, the great thing about Netflix is instant streaming. Instant streaming is the way that you can, through your laptop, through your iPad, through your Roku box, through your Apple TV.
I don't have
you're going to love it. You will love it, Catherine.
I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah.
So
love the Roku box.
And Netflix.
Oh, yeah. You got your Netflix app.
I don't even need cable.
You don't. No, it's true. The Roku is almost all you need. And Netflix is a great app to watch via Roku. I actually prefer it over my Apple TV app. But the nice thing is that Netflix gives you a lot of control. You can watch through a variety of gaming systems as well over the kind of movies that you watch. Now, what's great is that if you've got a movie that you think, oh, you know, that's such a Dead Poets Society. What an inspirational movie. I wish I could just play it right the second. That's the nice thing about instant streaming is it's a very much like an impulse watch. And it's not just movies, too. There's although there are classic movies, new releases, they're adding titles all of the time. TV shows. That's one of the things I love Netflix about the most. If I've got a particularly quiet weekend, I know I've got a few hours at a time to get caught up on maybe a show that I haven't seen before, or I know I'm about a season behind on, I can do that via Netflix. That's the nice thing about Netflix. It's not just movies, it's TV shows, TV series too, stuff that you haven't seen before. Somebody in chat said that Jingna's style reminded them of Vampire Diaries. Vampire Diaries is on Netflix. If you've never seen the series, you can watch seasons 1 and 2 right now.
Have you ever seen this?
No, I've never.
You have to check it out, I guess.
Yeah, no, I
can't. I guess I will.
I've got some vampire file, if that's actually the word, tooth file. Friends who love vampire stuff, and they're always telling me, you gotta watch Vampire Diaries. Anyway, netflix.com/twit is the URL. This is a special URL that'll get you or a friend, if you already have a Netflix account, you want to tell a friend, 30 days of instant streaming. 30 days of instant streaming, TV shows, movies, there's no limit on what you watch in those 30 days. You can really cover some ground. So thanks again to Netflix for sponsoring this episode of Twit Photo, and that URL once again is netflix.com/twit. All right, let's get into some good photography tips.
Yeah, let's go right into the tips. So our first tip is pay attention to the shadows.
Yeah. I think this is something that I don't think that's always covered a lot, but I really think it's important. Like, that's the way I learned. I think, like, a lot of times people just care about, like, what lighting should I be doing? Like, how should I set up all these lights? And I think the easiest answer is kind of to look at how your shadows will fall, because that will set, like, the mood of the shot. And it's almost everything about the photo on a, like, photography level sometimes to me. Because, you know, it can be moody, it could be, like, vibrant. Like, when you look at a shot, sometimes we're, like, trying to guess the number of lights, and, like, what is the reason that this shot is photographed the way it is? Then I'm like, okay, I go through, like, for my shots, I guess I should explain. For setting up, I go through references, like, sometimes from photography to paintings, and a lot of times is trying to replicate shadows that I think matter for the photo, and it helps you with, like, the sense of composition in a shot. And a lot of people don't realize how important that is. Like, I'm not sure, like, if I can just tell you, like, okay, go look at shadows in these photographs now and, like, just remember that, but it comes with time. I think each time you're shooting, like, every frame, try to observe how the light is falling and how the shadows are projected, and how, like, every little bit that you're moving in relation to your subject will make the light and shadows look different in your shot. I think that is like a little detail that a lot of people don't realize, because especially when you shoot models, people get so absorbed in trying to capture the model looking great, like her facial expression or what they assume like is like a fantastic framing. But, you know, all these little movements, especially if you are the one who is moving and everything else stays the same on the set or outdoors, it is so incredibly different. Like, the easiest thing to say is you are shooting like in a field and the sun is setting, shooting against the light and having flare into your camera where everything just goes soft, or whereas, you know, you compare it to shooting where the light is coming from behind you and right at the model where it's going to be harsh shadows. Those two are going to be like completely different in terms of mood. And I think learning how to just understand that relation of light source and also shadows is going to be like a huge factor in how your photos turn out, and I think going to be something distinctive in a person's photography style, because we all have different preferences to how like our eventual image should look like. And yeah, so that's like one tip I think people should try to look at. Yeah.
For anybody who's watching the video stream, saw a little preview of your second tip, which you call look around and learn. What does that mean?
Well, that's...
Is it working for you, Sarah?
Well...
I've been trying. It's not working out so well for me.
I'm going to give it my best shot, but I need a little technique.
This is just... plain as it sounds, you know? Like, I think there is inspirations and... things we can learn from that could inspire us like everywhere from everything, you know. But for me, of course, like it comes like I've already said, like comes like really, really heavily a lot from paintings. But you know, just going through like our daily lives, looking at images, observing, I think that's the key to creating an eye for arresting images, because that forms the foundation of like our aesthetics and style, from like in terms of color palette or lighting or framing or clothing, to makeup, to model choices. And a lot of people just, all they do is like look at photos and try to replicate that. And I think it's really important to go out of that box and look at a lot of very different things, because all these photos come from somewhere, and they are, these photographers, they are influenced by something. And if we're just making a copy of a copy of a copy, sometimes how much of it is really your own? Like, how much in essence do you have to bring to the table? And, you know, I think that subtracts a lot and limits a lot if we're only looking at photographs itself as like inspirations. So like everyday life, things that interest us, and just like photograph like a lot. And like I started off with a single kit lens when I had my 350D, so you know, all I had to do was like learn how the wide angle like the longer end of the lenses work and the wider angle of the lenses work, and you know, what effects it has on the photographs, because obviously like I said, I've never studied photography, and it was all trial and error. So like, I don't know what's the difference between like shooting at 55mm and like 18mm, you know. It's like I just zoom in and zoom out, right? And then eventually, of course, I learn like, oh, okay, the smaller the number goes, the wider the shot is, and the larger the number, like the more zoomed in it is. And at first, maybe I don't realize that when I zoom out, there's actually distortion to the edge of the photos. But after a while, after shooting a lot more, you know, like you have so many different like hundreds and thousands of photos to make comparison with, and then I start realizing like all these minute details about how each and little, like every little thing make a difference. So yeah, I mean,
so look
just really essentially look at a lot of different things and try, like just really go out and shoot a lot. It's really important.
So our third tip is keep things simple.
It sounds like you had to keep things simple, at least at the beginning, because you didn't really know how to use some of the tools.
Actually,
you had.
I have one kind of
That's not really true. Like, I know a lot of people actually, even including myself, sometimes we get over ambitious with a shoot because we're excited at the possibility of doing something. And like, oh, like I have this fancy garage I can shoot at with like a really, really cool car. And like, I want to add this, I want to add that. But of course, like logistically, like I don't understand that to light the car perfectly, I need like a humongous space, you know, because if not, I'll get like 10,000 crappy reflections in the shot on the car. And then trying to put a model in, how am I best going to frame it? Like it, we get over ambitious. Like my first shoot for Tapas Bazaar, like I was saying, I wanted to shoot a girl who was, like the story was based, centered around perfume. So I wanted to put her like kind of like an alien girl in a cave kind of thing, just really, really beautiful, siren-like. And we matted her hair, and I wanted to put her on like on sand. And we wanted good control of light, so we wanted to do it in the studio. I was like, oh, how much sand do we need? Like, I guess, I don't know, 100 kg, should that be, like that should be enough, right? But when we really tried to lay it out on the day before the shoot, we got 200 kg, and it was actually not enough to cover like a shot where I wanted to do half body of her lying down. So we had to get another 100 kg or 150, and it was like 300 kg of sand. And clearing it out from the studio was a nightmare, and trying to light all these globes and reflective surfaces was more nightmare. And just many things that we don't realize that would actually affect the shot just because we want to keep adding things, you know, that it's so easy to be excited. So I think the lesson learned is just to sometimes, like, especially in the beginning, like keep things simple. And like if it's really, really important job, like unless really, you know, it's tested and for sure, like you know what's coming, then try to keep it a bit simple. And I mean, like you guys said, like right in the beginning, when we don't have so much resources, where what like that's for the most of the case, then even for myself now, I prefer to keep it fast free, and then as much as like technically possible to achieve what I need. So like if I shoot outdoor these days, I prefer like as much as possible, I would like to just shoot with natural light, because if I have a strobe, for example, every little movement I make, I'm going to have readjust my light. I'm going to need my assistants to like move the whole set to like another 5 foot away when we decide to change like the spot of where we are shooting. And all these things, I think it comes in and breaks the pacing of a shoot. So I think the first thing to know is like how to gain like this good momentum. And like after that, you can work on, when you have a bigger team that can support you, you know, then you can add it up. And you know, in terms of teams or models or equipment and just elements of things to enhance what you want to do.
Well, you've had so much experience. I know on every Twit Photo show, we ask the guests what their favorite photos are.
Yeah, yes, we do.
So we know that your first favorite photo is a picture from Singapore Brides, Cold Flowers. Why do you like this picture so much? It is beautiful, but why do you love it?
Thank you. I guess it's this was the point of like in the beginning, I shot a lot of personal work, and that was like the bulk of whatever is in my portfolio. And I have never really felt that shooting is like a series of photos was like a strong point of mine, since what I've always tried to do is to create an image that works really well as a standalone shot, because I feel that gives it more art value in terms of looking at the photo. Because people sometimes forget, especially with the painterly elements I have sometimes, that you know, like, oh, you see a series of shots and it's like just okay, those are from a, you know, like a photo shoot. But if you just see a single photo, sometimes like the art value is like much higher. But of course, as I start shooting commercial, shooting fashion, you realize you need to have like a strong set of photos all together. And and then I spent like the last 1-2 years maybe like trying to work on that a lot. It was like it weighed in like really as a huge concern for me. And then at like for this shoot, like Singapore Brides, they've been a long-term client, and they're really, really supportive. They let me do practically anything I want to do. So I can come up with a concept, I can direct it on my own, and I just have a lot of creative freedom, and you have such like amazingly beautiful, gorgeous dresses and, you know, a budget to go with props and with studio. So I think this was like, I guess, a turning point for me in my photography, in that where I managed to find a good balance between trying to create like a series of strong images, but also at the same time, a strong shot on their own when they're viewed like individually. And I think it was successful in that way. And of course, like beyond all that, is that's because like I believe like all these images are like extremely beautiful to me, and it encompasses my style, like personal work style, but at the same time with like the commercial value of, you know, bringing out all these dresses beautifully in almost every single one of the shot. So for all these like numerous reasons that came together.
And then the second favorite photo we want to talk about is porcelain. This picture, we've seen it a couple times. Tony flipped through this a couple times, and it always got quite a reaction from our live viewers going, oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of, it's sort of a lady in the water type thing, mermaid quality. It is very simple, but it's beautiful.
Right. So this was shot when I was when I came here to LA. I shot it when I was in Orange County, in Irvine, and I really, really love redheads. Like I already mentioned, like because I really like the Pre-Raphaelites, and they have so many redheads. And this girl, I shot with her for my first job with Montblanc, and I loved her face so much. Like I've never ever kind of stay in touch with models I work with, because I feel like we just have so many new models we can work with all the time. But I liked her so much, I got her contact. And when I came to the US, I realized that she was actually represented by an agency in LA, like Photogenics. And I was like, oh, like, do you want to test? And she's like, oh, just, you know, go look for my booker. And so I was really, really happy we had the opportunity to test. And this was done, like, I think close to, like, it's early spring maybe, and it was like really, really cold, and like the water was freezing, and like we had to crawl through like bushes, like, you know, holes in bushes to get to the waters, and it was really, really gross actually, because yeah. Like the bottom,
wasn't just a dip in the lake this, the way it looks now.
The bottom of this was like, you know, like a foot or a foot and a half high off just like mud and dirt, and it was just the two of us, right? It was like really, really hard to walk. And I almost fell a few times. I was like, oh my God, like I don't want to drop my camera and stuff. And I never carry my camera with straps and things because like it gets in the way. And
did you ever have any doubt while you're on this journey? You know, to go by. Did you ever have doubts? You know, you're walking with this model, you're bringing her into the woods, you're going through all this mud. Are you ever at any moment feeling like second guessing yourself, and what made you proceed forward?
No, I know it would be good.
It's worth it.
I mean, like, I know I love her look, and I know the setting is beautiful. Like, I know it's going to be like a beautiful image, and if it somehow doesn't work, I have to make it work, because that's my responsibility as a photographer, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, in our final few minutes of the show, we definitely want to get into some of the gear that we use.
Yeah, so we have your two favorite gear items. Your lens of choice is the 70-200.
Yeah.
Are you Canon or Nikon?
Canon.
Okay. Just checking.
I used the 1DS.
Do you notice how I smile? I'm like,
Has anyone ever said, either are fine?
No.
It's one or the other.
No. And I'm
I don't care.
I'm a Canon shooter, so it's like...
To be honest, I don't really care. I mean, I've shot with Canon, I've shot with Nikon, I've shot with Hasselblad and Phase Ones, whatever delivered the images for me. Yeah. So, Canon was just because like my entry camera, like 350D... happened to be Canon, and it just stayed that way.
It's kind of whatever you pick in the beginning,
right?
Is really
when then you have lenses and you start collecting, and
yeah. So you love the 70-200. Why and what millimeter setting are you at most of the time?
I think I shoot a lot close to 200 because I'm such a portrait based shooter, because just of how I started in the beginning, like there's nothing I can use for styling, so I just focus on portraits so much more. And it, I guess that just carried over to like the way I do photography. Like even now, like in my fashion shoots, sometimes we have one or two stunning portraits that I like to include all the time, and I like to shoot with that. I don't like a lot of distortion in my images, because goes back to the painting influences, because most of those things don't really have like wide angle distortion. It's just very, very dead on, and like long lenses kind of do that for you. Yeah. See, I mean, like right now I explore with wide angles sometimes, but I still like to shoot with long lens.
Did you say 100 or 200 is where you're normally
sitting? 100.
100?
200, 200.
Oh, 200. 200.
Yeah. The high end.
Yeah. There you go. And then your other favorite item that you'd like to discuss is the beauty dish.
I don't even know what beauty dish is.
Yeah, Jeremy Cowart said the same thing last week. So elaborate on why. What's up with the love of the beauty dish? Actually, I like how she says this. It can be soft or it can be hard depending on angles, but either way. No, this is my favorite part. I don't think I can live without beauty dishes. Period.
Maybe I can't. Tell me more.
Well, I mean, you have, like, you're going to have soft boxes, and then you're going to have these, like, bare bulbs where it creates, like, you know, harsh lights for sure. But, like, a beauty dish just creates a kind of slightly soft, softer edge in the fall-off as compared to, like, a bare bulb, like a dark, like, sunlight light. But at the same time, it has a harder shadow than what you would get from, say, a softbox. I wish I had an image you guys can pull out so we can talk about it. Should I send you a link?
I don't know if we even have time to do that. But okay. Well, you said that you talked about it a little bit last week, so a lot of the audience is familiar.
We can put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, we can do that.
We'll put a link in the show notes so people can...
Yeah, if you have examples of how the beauty dish has really helped particular photos where you say, that, I mean, just couldn't have been achieved otherwise, we'll add that in our show notes afterwards so people can go to twit.tv/...
It just makes the skin look really, really good. It makes the skin look really, really beautiful.
Yeah, and as Jeremy Cowart...
I should be shot with beauty dishes.
As Jeremy Cowart says, exactly what you just said. He says, nobody's going to argue when you say, pull out the beauty dish.
Oh, really? Is that the sort of thing that if you've got a model who... knows photography equipment well enough, kind of goes like, okay, I'm going to look awesome.
Maybe, yeah, I think so.
I know it's
very possible, like, you know, a harsh light can be unflattering because, like, it brings out blemishes sometimes with the way the shadows are. Mm-hmm. Or a really soft light can make the photo look very, very flat and, like, becomes boring. But, you know, beauty dish has so much more flexibility in terms of that shadows that you have. Attention to shadows.
Yeah. So you're very active on social media, so I want to give people a way to stay in touch. I know your Facebook's a big place, and then also on Twitter, and we will put these links in the show notes as well.
For anybody who wants to go now, it's ZE Motion, both at Twitter and Facebook.com/ZEmotion.
So ZE Motion, what made you come up with that name versus using your name?
Well, I mean, when we were kids, no one wants to use our own names, right? And, I mean, Z-Motion came from Gundam Wing, too. So. I thought it was really cool. Like, it kind of meant, like, zero emotion and just put it together.
Yeah, it's kind of your online alias.
I like it.
I like it, too.
It fits you. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Shingna.
It's an honor to have you.
I loved
on the
this.
Show. And, like, 10 years from now, when you're not talking to anyone anymore...
Right.
You're so huge.
When all you do is drink champagne and, you know, and just watch fashion runway
actually,
shows.
Actually, really quick, I have to, just one little thing. When I called her yesterday, it was interesting what you said about the perception you have, mm-hmm. you know, and we were talking about perception of fashion photographers. I had that, and I called her on the phone, and it was interesting. She said, the first thing she said to me is, you know, I'm really laid back person. I'm not obsessed with fashion. I just want to make beautiful photos.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I really think we saw that to you, of that side of you today. And I'm just really glad that you came on the show. And I'm sure you're going to be a big inspiration for a lot of people. And
thank you.
We'll look forward to having you back.
Absolutely. And and her website, many of the photos that you saw during the show are on display there as well at Zhang Jingna. So it's ZHANGJINGNA.com. Of course, that'll be in our show notes. But if anyone wants to hop over there now, it was added in the chat room a couple times while we were live. But just beautiful photos. I mean, you have such amazing talent. And,
thank you. And I know we're running late, so I just wanted to say sorry to the fans that I said I'll answer questions for, because I don't think we have time for that. But I'll do like a separate Ask Me Anything session later on if like you guys are okay.
Hey,
yeah, I'm really sorry
absolutely.
Jingna, do you want to set up a Google chat later? Another time? Oh, you don't. Sure. You're not on Google. You need to get on Google. She's not on Google Plus.
Brand pages. You can get on Google Plus and answer anyone's question. It's the perfect place for you.
We'll talk. We'll talk.
Well, thanks so much again for being on the show today. It was a real pleasure. And thanks to Catherine for letting me hang out in Leo's place. Absolutely.
Very cool. It's quite an honor. And then hang out after the show in 1 hour after TNT.
That's right.
Go to my blog to see where to go. And then also the Twit Photo guest quest is still on. So we're getting down to the wire. It's 2 weeks left to get your entries in. So make sure you get in there. We've gotten a lot of great stuff. It's very exciting.
So that's something that you can find at twit.tv, the guest quest.
Yeah, and it's also on my blog.
And it's also on your blog at catherinehall.net.
Yeah.
Good. So if for any reason you
it's
haven't participated
to
yet.
To be a guest on the show. It's made for emerging photographers. Going back to what we were talking about, the hardest part is that initial break.
Right. Okay, so we'll go to catherinehall.net because it's front and center. Twit Photo, guest quest. If you think you've got what it takes, you can be in Jingle's
place.
Even
if you don't think you got what it takes.
Am I allowed to take part in that? I think I'm emerging.
I think you've already won, kind of.
You're a guest on the show.
Right.
You got the prize.
You made it. Congratulations. All right, well, that's it for this edition of Twit Photo. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks to Jingna for being our esteemed guest. And thanks to Catherine for letting me learn a thing or two.
Sarah, for joining us.
Absolutely. And we'll see you next time on Twit Photo.